Hello and welcome to Destination Draft Day, your one-stop spot for all things college football, NFL draft, and NFL talk. Nick Durst here by my side, Michael Rockman as well. You know, we are really leading off with a great headline today. Josh Gordon has just been signed by the Kansas City Chiefs. And, you know, first and foremost, Nick, I want to get your thoughts on the signing. Do you think it's needed for the Chiefs? Do you think Josh Gordon can sort of step up into his old days and really flash? And, you know, if so, what does that do for Kansas City?
Josh Gordon was a great receiver 6 years ago. Off the top of my head, I would say he's probably played five games in the past 6 years, if I had a guess. So, I mean, yeah, I'm sure they're paying him nothing. So if he actually is on the field, he could get in there, replace Sammy Watkins as the number two option there for the Chiefs. Obviously, the Chiefs, the first two-game losing streak in quite some time. Big win for the Chargers. And, you know, it certainly can't hurt, but there's great risk there because you don't know how long he's going to be eligible for. Probably not going to play this week because he's got to learn the playbook. So we're looking at 2 weeks from now, maybe I'm playing. And then who knows, another suspension could be right around the corner with him. It's very tough and a sad situation because this guy was one of the best wide receivers in football for about a year and a half span, and he kind of just threw it all away.
Yeah, I'm really rooting for him. I'd like to see him stay on the field, obviously. I'd like to see him get through some of the issues that he's had. Ultimately, I think this is needed for the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs have an issue where they just haven't really had that weapon step up, and it seems you take away Tyreek Hill. Obviously, you know, it's not an easy task to eliminate Tyreek Hill, eliminate Travis Kelce, but it's definitely necessary that they find another weapon. And I think by adding Josh Gordon, while he may not be able to just be this third superstar in the passing game, I think he's going to add something to the wide receiver room that is absolutely necessary to open up the field at least a little bit for the entire offense.
Yeah, they got to do something. The Chiefs, and I've been saying since before the season, they're not going to be marching right towards the AFC Championship game this year. And you know, right now, they're looking up. They're in last place in the division. Who would have thought? Who would have seen that coming going into Week 4?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, I mean, the Chiefs have always been this team that's just kind of dominated their way through games. Offensively, they have everything to offer to where you're not necessarily worried about any issues that maybe come on defensively. But now, you know, offenses are sort of answering back and it's leading to issues for this team, and they haven't really been able to outscore teams with ease. They've been slowed down a little bit. Mahomes had some turnovers. Do I think this is a sign of the end for the Chiefs or even a bad sign at all? Not necessarily. I think they're going to bounce back in a major way, still be one of the top teams in the AFC come playoff time. But right now they need to address it as if it's, you know, the world's on fire and, you know, come out with that fire in this next week's game. And I think they're going to do that.
It's going to be interesting. You know, I'm buying in on the Raiders here. I'm very much buying in, of course, on Justin Herbert and the Chargers. And I think the Broncos have had an easy schedule so far. But hey, they're legit. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater has been really good.
Yeah, Teddy's looked great. I think he absolutely has, you know, changed his game in necessary ways in order for the Broncos to find success. Obviously, you know, they have some talented running backs. Melvin Gordon is obviously right now the main guy with Javonte Williams not far behind. I think both those guys contribute tremendously. Wide receiver room a little banged up, but still, even when injured, they have a nice set of weapons. Tim Patrick has stepped up well into that role and really been a solid starting receiver. And I think his contract expires this offseason, if I'm not mistaken. So I think he will find a new home this offseason and really be a consistent starter somewhere. And if you're a team, you know, New Orleans, Detroit, where you're kind of looking for wide receiver help, I think this is someone that you got to target because he's going to be great value for what he's going to be able to produce. But yeah, the AFC West is tough. The Raiders look good. The Broncos look good. The Chiefs are always going to be the Chiefs, and the Chargers look good as well, and they're young and rising. There's so much talent in the West side of football for the NFL, NFC, and AFC, and we've talked about it already, but I don't think it can be stated enough just how strong both those divisions are.
Yeah, I guess the West is just tremendous right now. We could talk about it. I guess we'll just talk about some of the games right now. But how about the Seahawks, Michael? We called it right here on Friday. We said the Vikings were going to win. And kudos to Kirk Cousins, who quietly is off to a tremendous start, looking like one of the best quarterbacks in the league this season.
Yeah, I was a little worried about the Vikings heading into the year just because of everything going on with Zimmer and Kirk Cousins. I was worried that maybe the locker room would truly get divided with everything that was pretty much being openly discussed to the press. But it seems to be all right. Things seem to be okay for the Minnesota Vikings, and they're rolling, and they just really put down a great performance, even without Dalvin Cook to really rely on in the game. And, you know, Alexander Mattison stepped up pretty well, but ultimately the Vikings had a lot of control in this game. I think one huge testament needs to go to just how strong this defense looks. And I think that's just a big part of what Zimmer was able to do after being able to add some experience and some talent to that cornerback room.
Yeah, a huge win for the Vikings. They didn't want to go to 0-3. They're 1-2 now in what is a not-so-good division. Justin Fields did not look good, but he also got sacked 9 times, so won't put the blame on him that much. And the Browns destroy the Bears 26-6. And the story here would be that Odell Beckham Jr. was back, and he made an impact. 5 receptions for 77 yards. Again, you cannot tell me the Browns are a better team without Odell Beckham Jr. Imagine if they can get him and Landry both playing at the same time. Be quite difficult for opposing defenses to guard them, especially when the Browns are so run first. The Browns do it right with Stefanski. Run the ball to set up the passing game. You don't see that too much in the NFL anymore, and that's why the Browns look like one of the better teams in the AFC.
Yeah, I think their offense really has gotten things going in a major way, and I think that's huge for just overall success, especially when you have a young QB. I know Baker Mayfield is in his third year, to where it's easy to kind of say, oh, you know, they're fine, you know, he can be. Hello?
Yes.
All right. Sorry. Someone tried calling me. Yeah. Sorry. So Baker Mayfield is in his third year, and I get that. But at the same time, you got to be able to really rely on this run game in order to help out any young QB in the NFL. And I think for a QB like Baker, if you keep his job as easy as possible, then he's going to produce as efficiently as you can make him. And, you know, Mayfield's got an arm. He's got the talent to really let it rip and really carry you when needed. But at the same time, you know, when you have Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt in this backfield, you hand off as much as you can, and you're going to control the game for most portions of any game you're in. And they've done a great job of adding to this defense. Greg Newsome has looked like a phenomenal rookie. Owusu-Koramoah, little spoiler for you, on the Rockman's Rookies of the Week. So, you know, and then with the defensive line, having Myles Garrett with the help of Jadeveon Clowney, who's maybe not a dominant pass rusher, but is a good run stuffer and can be a complimentary piece when working opposite someone as talented as Garrett. So there's just plenty of additions to this team that are phenomenal. And really, I think the Browns are going to start getting going even better on defense, and the offense is always going to be there. So we'll see what happens, but I'm excited for Cleveland.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we'll get to Rockman's Rookies of the Week later on. And I don't think it's crazy for me to say that. I know he's not going to be in there, but if we had to pick QB this week, it would have to have been Davis Mills, I think, would have been the Rockman's Rookie of the Week quarterback, just because of everything that we saw. But Rick wants to know, leading into that, So when do we as fans start to think that even first-round QBs are going to be superstars in their first years? I agree with you. I think because Mahomes is so good in his second year of the league, and Lamar Jackson and the MVP's back-to-back years, and Justin Herbert was ridiculous last year, they still go 7-9, that the expectation now is for franchises is, all right, we're going to draft our guy, and boom, right away, we're going to be great. Not the case, but big win yesterday for the Bengals and Joe Burrow. This is kind of his coming out party, leaving a statement here. A big pass to Chase for a touchdown. And the Bengals, victorious, big win over the Pittsburgh Steelers, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was huge for Joe Burrow, huge for the Bengals. They needed that win. We talked about that even last Friday's episode. We said, look, this is major for the Bengals. If they plan on being a competitive team in this division, they at least need to get past the Steelers, because the Browns probably aren't going to let up. The Ravens probably aren't going to let up. Those are the two, you know, younger, more well-balanced teams in the division. They need to get past the Steelers if they're really trying to enter into that picture. They absolutely did it. They had a very strong performance, kept the Steelers to 10 points. Yeah, I mean, I love to see it from the Bengals. I like a lot of their players. Now the next step is moving up further in those standings. And right now it seems like maybe the Ravens are that next team that is a little bit more beatable. Obviously got by the skin of their teeth with his last game. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But, man, I don't know. I think I'm really concerned for the Steelers, because that is not a good performance at all. Big Ben doesn't look good. The defense has been fine, but, you know, when the offense doesn't get going, there's nothing a defense can really do to really win games. I understand that, you know, the saying is defense wins championships, but if you hold a team to 3 points and your offense can't score any, you're going to lose. So,
yeah, Andy says Bengals are a surprise. Well, yeah, I mean, they're 2-1. Let's not get too crazy here, but I think both of us kind of felt like they were going to win that game. I'm really not like what I'm seeing from the Steelers. They play the Pack next week. We'll talk about the Packers in a bit, because, wow, what an ending to that game last night. But, you know, you mentioned the Ravens. They barely squeaked by a 66-yard bouncing field goal. You know, if I'm a Lions fan, I got to be happy with the way the Lions are playing, despite the record. You know, I like what I'm seeing out of Dan Campbell here. And, you know, Goff's not lighting it up, but he's not making any mistakes. He's not really throwing interceptions. So Lions probably should have won that game. And I think, you know, we both threw the Browns to win a division. But the Ravens, they got some work to do if they do, in fact, think they're going to make the wild card at least here. But I don't know. So many injuries to this team, so it's gonna be a tough journey for them ahead here.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look around at the current standings right now in the AFC. I mean, you assume Buffalo is gonna come out of the AFC East. There's a chance Miami could get in there, but right now with the Tua injury and, you know, just the offense still kind of getting in the rhythm of things, I think it looks like they might potentially miss out on playoffs. I think the Patriots are around a 7-8 win team, so I don't think they're going to make playoffs. Jets, horrendous. So, you know, we're taking one team out of the AFC East. You look at the AFC West, though, and you really have to consider probably one, at least one.
Could be three, I think. Three teams.
At least one of Vegas and Denver is probably going to make playoffs. Two 3-0 teams, the odds are extremely in their favor that at least one of those teams good enough to make it. And then you assume Kansas City is going to make it. You know, chaos isn't going to just absolutely pour out.
Respect for the Chargers there.
Well, I'm saying the Chargers could very well too. I'm just saying, like, you know, those are like the guarantees.
Good. Yeah. Broncos, Ravens next week, I believe.
Yeah. And then you got the AFC South winner and you assume the Browns. So that's five spots and there's two left from that. So, you know, it could very easily be one of the other teams that are Las Vegas and Broncos, and both those teams could easily make it. The Chargers could easily be that team. The Bengals and Ravens are still very much in contention. You know, we said the Dolphins maybe, and, you know, and then there's the Ravens. So there's like five teams competing for those last two spots. And
so the Colts, the Colts are done, Michael.
I think the Colts are probably out of it. I think they can. I think they can put together a solid season. They aren't going to be this team that, you know, barely wins, but I think they're going to be sitting in that like middling range rather than playoff contention range.
So the Colts, I think, as they lose to the Titans, are going to be looking for a quarterback next year. I think the Carson Wentz era, if they don't make the playoffs, is going to be over.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. I feel like they need to add weapons to that offense regardless of who's at QB next year, because Zach Pascal, Michael Pittman, like, it's good, but you need a dynamic type of receiver to kind of make it all tied together. And I don't know if you're going to get that in maybe like Garrett Wilson or Chris Olave or Treylon Burks, but I do think that they need to find a way to go out and get someone. And, you know, maybe that's like a Davante Adams if the Packers are dumb enough to let him walk. But I think the Colts are in dire need of adding sort of a superstar talent to this offense to help whoever's at QB.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting there. Rick says he thinks the Dolphins will get in. I don't know. I think it's gonna be tough. And when it was the Patriots get a top 10 pick and pull the next franchise tackle. Patriots did not play too well, Michael, against the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's similar to Colts' situation where they have a pretty good roster, but there's not really a playmaker on this offense that really kind of elevates it. So right now, while you're trying to get Mac Jones acclimated, it's such a limited offense that a competent defense is really going to slow it down. And we've seen that be the case. And we saw it absolutely yesterday where, you know, they just weren't hitting on their deep shots. They only put up 13 points. And, you know, this was bad, but it's going to continue to be like that against the Buccaneers next week. That Texans game, the Cowboys game, you know, there's a little bit more hope there. But, you know, whenever you're going against these well-rounded defenses like the Bucs, like the Saints, they're going to take away that limited option that you give your rookie QB if you're trying to go that path of, you know, getting them ready. And right now that's sort of the reality for the Patriots, and it's going to result in some games that you're just struggling to find any positives from.
Yeah, because Patriots O-line is rough. No scare. Makes it woof. Yeah, I mean, Patriots didn't look good. I don't know. Mac Jones, shaky, but again, how much that's the offensive line. Sticking with the AFC East, man, the Jets look like the worst team in the NFL. 2 years in a row. You change the coach, you change the QB, but if you don't change the offensive line, you don't change the skill set positions, you're still going to lose games and look bad. You got the offensive lineman, blaming Zach Wilson for not getting rid of the ball here. Just a bad luck. It's a bad culture. I thought the Jets maybe could win, you know, four or five games this year, but maybe I think they're looking at a 2 or 3 win season at this point.
Yeah, it's not looking good for them. You know, you look around, and they tried to change their skill position and their offensive line play. Vera Tucker has struggled immensely. Corey Davis has been all right, but he's had some drops. Elijah Moore really hasn't gotten the opportunities just because of the O-line issues. And, you know, Zach Wilson has some great plays where I'm saying, okay, you can obviously see where the talent is here and what the future probably holds for him. But at the same time, you know, there's just plays where he kind of does too much. And I think that's going to be something that needs to be ironed out. But when everything sort of is falling apart right now, it's very common for young QBs to take that path. And yeah, the Jets need to work with urgency in trying to figure this situation out, because they've invested in their O-line. You know, they got Morgan Moses, Mekhi Becton, Elijah Vera Tucker they traded up for. They have the pieces to where it should, on paper, it would seem like it would work. And then it's just been chaos still. So I don't know what the fix is. I'm not that smart when it comes to football to, you know, to fix the Jets, but man, they need to do something, because this is really scary if you're a Jets fan. And I know you don't want to overreact to 3 weeks of football, but you also don't want to send your QB through a 17-game guillotine where he's just getting killed every game.
Yeah, it's if he gets hurt, I mean, they're going to be regretting it big time. Rick is saying hello to MLB Rules, who's back for the season finally. Titans production for the rest of the year. I think the Titans are going to get the four seed. I think they'll have the worst record of the division winners. And I think they will go 11-7 on the season. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, I see 11-6, 10-7, 12-5 maybe. I think they could sneak in there. I think the big thing is getting Derrick Henry going, and he has. He's really started to control the ball, you know, be a dominant runner again. That week one performance seems more like a fluke than any concern. I think the Titans are far and away the best team in the AFC South, and we're going to see them kind of benefit from that in their record. And it seems like, assuming everyone kind of stays their pace, stays the course, they should be 6-0 in division, maybe 5-1 if the Colts kind of turn things around.
All right, next team I want to discuss is the Giants and the Falcons. Next game to discuss. Falcons get a much-needed win. The Giants are an absolute tailspin right now. Offensively, they look atrocious for the third straight game. They give up the lead going into halftime, more give up points. And I think the Giants are legitimately looking at an 0-10 start here, Michael. Their schedule gets a lot harder from here. I don't see them winning many games until they play the Eagles after they play the Bucks, which I think is week 11 or maybe 12, depending on the bye week. But, you know, good job by Arthur Smith and the Falcons to pull that one out. But, yeah, it's not good if you're a fan of New York football in New York City, because the Giants and Jets the past 5 years through the first 3 weeks, I think, are like have one win combined. So not great.
Yeah, it's been a tough start for the Giants. I have no idea how they lost that game against the Falcons. I mean, the Falcons are bad, and that's a really bad sign for the Giants. I thought that they were going to win that one, you know, be okay forward, and they lost it. I don't know. I think they have a chance to bounce back. You know, maybe a sneaky upset against the Saints, maybe one against the Panthers down the line. But this is a horrible start, and really they need to get something going on offense, whether that's, you know, Barkley kind of getting healthier, getting a bigger role as we go on, or just Daniel Jones kind of carrying this offense to get a little bit more in terms of scoring production. But on the bright side, you know, your defense hasn't been bad this year. I think there's still a lot of bright spots in terms of just overall talent on this roster. It's just whether you can get that consistent play to where everything can kind of work together for a win. And right now, you know, like you said, it's not looking good to where this is more concerning than just, oh, we're 0-3, but, you know, we've had some really tight games and we're going to turn this around because we just had a tough schedule. You know, you played teams that Washington and Atlanta are very beatable. Like, that's just poor showing on your end. So the Giants, maybe not sounding the buzzer yet for alarms and, you know, screaming at the top of my lungs, but very concerning based on the overachieving of last year, which had people kind of hopeful that maybe this next year would be a close to playoff type team. And now it's looking like potential bottom five.
Andy says the Giants made many mistakes on their last drive. Well, yeah, I don't know what Jason Garrett was thinking there. They have a third and 10. You know, they got to go. Should we go for the first there to win the game? Instead, it's a tie game here. The best play he come up with is throwing the ball 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage to Saquon Barkley for a gain of nothing. Punt the ball, and then Falcons come down the field and win it. So, yeah, that was not smart. At that point, with a, you know, minute and 50-something left, you're basically playing for a tie or playing for overtime if you decide that you're going to run that play there. You need to go for the first down and try to actually win the game. Horrible play calling. Jason Garrett, not very creative. But, hey, it was good to see Barkley you know, show some explosiveness overall, and he got a touchdown, so definitely making his fantasy owners happy.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there's a little bit of chemistry being built between Jones and Galladay, which is huge. Galladay's never been one to really separate with ease, which could kind of cause issues, especially for Jones, who really likes to throw to wide open guys, you know, sometimes is a little bit late on his reads. And, you know, getting that chemistry down with Galladay, getting that trust built is to potential success for the team. And, you know, for Daniel Jones and Kenny Galladay to have Galladay putting up the 4-catch, 64-yard day, while it's not a, you know, highlight, super notable box score type of game, I think it is a good sign for building chemistry between them going forward.
Yeah, I think Jones was almost forced to throw to him because Shepard went out with the injury, Slayton went out with the injury, his top two favorite guys. Kadarius Toney still basically isn't really getting involved in the game plan at all, but you know, big break, tough break for the Giants. Blake Martinez, ACL injury. He's out for the year. So that's going to be tough. But let's move on to some other games here. You know, we mentioned the Bills are on a roll here. They destroy the Washington football team. Josh Allen looking absolutely amazing, looking like an MVP. Cardinals, they come from behind. They beat the Jaguars. Kyler Murray, he's didn't get a touchdown pass, but, you know, he kept them in the game, 316 yards passing. And of course he ran for a touchdown as well. Another MVP candidate there. And the, from the early slate, the other game we didn't talk about before, we'll talk about the big 4 o'clock game and the Sunday night football game, is the Dolphins and the Raiders. Dolphins hung tough, but hey, the Raiders, they pulled that again. Las Vegas is going wild here for their Las Vegas Raiders. Your thoughts on those three games and some of the individual performances we saw?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, Buffalo looked dominant. I do think Washington is one of the teams that was kind of set up to disappoint this year. I thought they benefited from the weaker division, and now that's kind of gotten a little bit back, they don't look good. And, you know, with Fitzpatrick getting hurt, obviously it stalled the offense a little bit, but overall, I just think Washington still has a little bit of work left to do. But for the Raiders, you know, I think this is huge. The fact that they were able to kind of overcome what felt like a trap game early, you know, Dolphins scored right away. And immediately in my mind, I was like, man, you know, I feel like Dolphins are going to win this one. I think this is kind of a situation where the Dolphins need a win, whereas the Raiders can afford to lose. And they really answered back. They were down 14-2 after the first quarter. They were able to come back in that one. And, you know, coming away with a victory, even though it's an overtime win, even though, you know, people want to gripe on the Raiders when they can, it's a great start. You're 3-0. You know, you have some young weapons really stepping up in Renfro, Ruggs, and Edwards. Yeah, everything's seeming to come together for the Raiders. I think the defense could still use a little bit of improvement, but it's a very good start for what Las Vegas fans probably weren't even expecting to start out this well. So, good way to begin the season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, so the 4:25 game, the game of the week, Buccaneers-Rams. Listen, the Bucs, they really missed Antonio Brown big time in this one, and then having Gronk go out for a little bit with injury definitely didn't help them in stopping that aggressive pass rush from the Rams. And ultimately, the Rams came out on top here. And this could be a win that is really huge because now you're looking at the Rams as the one seed in the NFC. And I think it's going to be so crucial this year, whether it's the Rams, the Packers, the Bucks, you know, whoever it may be. Getting that one seed is going to be of the utmost importance when it comes to determining who's going to get to the Super Bowl this year. I think the home game is going to be really important. But right now, we don't get the Rams and Cardinals. They're undefeated. The Buccaneers, they drop one, and we'll get to the Packers momentarily. But to me, those look like the top four teams at this point of the NFC.
Yeah, and we talked about it on Friday. I said that I thought the Rams would probably win it just because – it kind of meant more. And I know that the Bucs probably came in with a full head of steam and weren't like losing focus on this one. But I do think that the Rams kind of looked at this game as, look, if we don't win this one, then we can't really feel like we're a contender in this league. Whereas the Bucs just came in and said, okay, it's another game we got to prepare. But, you know, probably weren't as hyper focused as the Rams on this one. You know, you could tell even when they got that stop at halftime, how fired up McVay was. I think it just meant a lot to the Rams in terms of, look, we need to prove that with Stafford, we're a whole new team. Doesn't mean that, you know, the Rams are automatically going to beat them if they face off again in playoffs. Absolutely not. You know, I think that's just going to be dependent on what happens further down the line. But the main takeaway for me here is the Bucs need to figure out what's going on with their secondary. They are completely decimated with injuries right now. Whether they bring in a veteran or whether they, you know, find some new people to kind of step in and hopefully step up while their starters are out, it's an absolute necessity, because you can't afford to sit here and just have other teams put up as many points as they can and pass all over you, because while your offense can score with almost anyone, you don't want to rely on that. And right now with the secondary they have, you know, Ross Cockrell struggling with all these other pieces out, it's just going to put your offense in a bad spot, and, you know, any small mistakes cost your team the game.
Yeah, and also I think this is just a bad game for Todd Bowles. I think he was very much out-schemed, out-coached by McVay, McVay's offense, and, you know, the Bucs defense just did not look that good, and we'll see if these teams play each other. It could be a different story in the playoffs. And now, last night, you know, the 49ers did everything right, except they gave the ball back to Aaron Rodgers to end the game. He needs 50-something seconds, two completions, gets the team into field goal range, and Crosby kicks the game winner. Gut-wrenching loss for the 49ers, but Aaron Rodgers now 9-0 in his last 9 primetime games. So he's the true primetime. Amazing job by Rodgers there to get the Packers in a position to win the game.
Absolutely. I feel like that was a good game for both teams. I know the 49ers lost that one, but I feel like a lot of people kind of were expecting the Packers to win that and were saying, like, you know, it'll probably be a blowout of sorts. The 49ers almost looked like they were just going to kind of fall off there heading into halftime 17-7. I kind of thought that it would be one of those boring second halves where not much happens, and then we're just saying, look, you know, what do the 49ers do, because this is just a flat performance. But they answered back. Jimmy looked good. Jimmy made some great throws to lead his team down and score with, you know, 37 seconds, and then Aaron Rodgers was Aaron Rodgers. So really an impressive performance by both sides. I think the 49ers prove that they're very much a dominant team, and I think that they're going to be in the playoffs when it's all said and done this year, which I didn't think so before. Heading into the season, I thought we were going to see Rams, Seahawks with Cardinals and 49ers kind of 3-4, not really sure which one. But now I think 49ers are in. It's probably Cardinals still in, but I don't know if they're 3 or 2. But it seems like the Seahawks are almost the odd team out of this division. And, you know, with a talent like Russell Wilson, with guys like DK, Chris Carson, Tyler Lockett, despite the injuries to those last two. And then, you know, Bobby Wagner, pieces like that all around this roster. It's crazy to say, you know, they're looking like not making the playoffs just 3 weeks in.
Yeah, I think they're going to blow it up after this season. And, you know, between the Bears and the Giants and the Jets, you know, those are going to be, I think those are the three of the worst teams right now. If the Giants somehow end up with two of the top three picks in the draft, I think if they want to get Russell Wilson, they certainly can get Russell Wilson next year. So something to keep an eye on there with the draft, of course. But a lot of guys were drafted, so showing their performances here, really nobody great. No standouts at the QB position, so I don't think there's going to be a QB here. But let's see it. Rockman's Rookies of the Week.
Yeah, sadly, no QBs were able to make the list. But the first one is Najee Harris, who maybe didn't get going as much as a runner this past performance. 14 rushes, 40 yards. But where he really gets the attention is these 14 catches for 102 yards set a franchise record for most catches in a game. A stud, really. And I think the reason he hasn't gotten going in the run game is more on the O-line than himself. I'm really excited to see what Najee Harris can become when this roster kind of gets fixed up for the Steelers. One of the few bright spots of this offense, especially in this past week against Cincinnati, where they only scored 10 points. The next rookie of the week is Ja'Marr Chase. 4 catches, 65 yards, and 2 touchdowns. You know, we talked about it week one. This offense absolutely opened up once Chase got involved, and now he seems to be an absolute stud. Joe Burrow's go-to guy. I know a lot of people said that the Bengals would regret it, not picking an offensive lineman instead of Chase. I don't know. I think Chase is such a security blanket for Joe Burrow that it doesn't matter. Like, I think that the offensive line has obviously been improved with their other picks, but I think it's huge just having Ja'Marr Chase, whereas, you know, maybe if T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd were here, maybe there is more protection, but maybe Joe Burrow doesn't have his go-to guy, and this offense just isn't clicking. And now, you know, with Chase in the picture, it absolutely is. The next rookie of the week is Azeez Ojulari. 3 tackles, 1 sack on a strip sack of Matt Ryan. Absolutely huge so far in the season. 3 sacks for 3 games. Ojulari kind of had more medical concerns that kind of kicked him out of that first round, but he has really gotten it going for the Giants. Shown to be a nice pick, and I'm really excited what he can do. But in this game against the Falcons, he's getting the attention. Great performance, and I think there is a lot in store for Ojulari in his future, both in New York and just for himself. Next one on the list is Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. 4 tackles, 2 pass deflections, 1/2 a sack, 1 tackle for loss. He's in a limited role right now with this Browns defense. He really has been worked around in multiple roles, kind of taken off the field a decent bit, not getting a lot of pass rush opportunities. I think they said he had 4 in this game against the Bears, and he was able to get 1/2 a sack. Myles Garrett, sadly, was able to meet him to share one. You know, Garrett kind of selfish because he already had 4 himself. Really just a outstanding performance for Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. 2 pass deflections and I think 11 duties in coverage. He was in a limited role, but he was making plays all over the field. A great sign and great show of versatility for Owusu-Koramoah. And, you know, for the Browns linebacker unit, that is absolutely a huge get. And the last rookie of the week, Asante Samuel Jr., back on here a second time. 2 tackles, an interception, a pass deflection. Look, he is looking like an absolute stud. A lot of the concern for him was his overall frame, and he was an outside corner with that frame. But he has stepped up to the challenge, been an absolute beast for the Chargers, and, you know, it's just been outstanding to watch. He seems to be a huge bright spot in what is an incredible corner class. You know, Patrick Surtain, Asante Samuel Jr., Greg Newsome, J.C. Horn, who sadly is injured. But, I mean, there's just so many guys in this class that are absolute studs. I'm looking forward to seeing the playout from this class because right now, you know, you could say 5 guys are your cornerback 1, and I probably wouldn't disagree with any of them. So, really just a great start for the rookie cornerback class and enjoyable start for this rookie class. A little bit down week in terms of production for these rookies of the week, but still a very good week of football and a very enjoyable class overall.
Yeah, I think the Foreman formula would tell you that we're probably not going to have an offensive rookie of the year at the quarterback position this year. So right now I would say Ja'Marr Chase is the favorite. And we're starting to see a trend here with Rockman Jerkers of the Week, and that is Asante Samuel Jr. He's going to be here early and often, I think, for the rest of the season as well. Potentially, we're looking at the Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, it's a very exciting class. I really loved Asante Samuel Jr. I shared the same concerns in terms of just overall height. Wondered how he was going to fare on the outside, but, man, you can tell he's got some NFL in his bloodlines because he makes plays. He doesn't seem to get shaken up at all by any matchup and, you know, just continues to show that confidence. And, you know, going against the Chiefs offense, it's easy for a young corner to kind of get toasted. He just is not getting toasted at all.
Yeah, and Mars says, wait till Lance starts. I really don't think he's going to start this year unless it's an injury, Michael, because Garoppolo is looking pretty good, pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because – they seem to like to try to work him in. They've given him some rushing opportunities, but the 49ers are going to be competitive, and it's going to be tough to really move on to Trey Lance if you're sitting there at, like, let's say 8-3, and, you know, maybe Jimmy has a bad game, but are you really going to make that change when you're looking so well in the playoff picture? You know, 49ers seem to be full in on trying to get back to playoffs, trying to get back into contention. And while I do think Trey Lance has plenty of natural talent, could very well become the start of the season, if they're competing at a high level, then I think those chances dwindle down week after week.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. Now, shifting gears to college football. Michael, who saw this coming? Clemson is done. They lose their second game of the season to NC State, and they are now ranked number 25. Literally no shot for an ACC team to make the college football playoff this year. Opens the door for the three teams for the SEC or Notre Dame. How shocked are you that Clemson has just fallen off a cliff, essentially?
Yeah, well, first off, I want to address, are you just disrespecting Wake Forest? They're still undefeated, you know? Who knows?
I mean, I'd be down with that. I'd be cool to say. I just think even if Wake Forest went undefeated, there would be more SEC bias from the committee.
No, I could absolutely see it. But yeah, I mean, I'm shocked by this. You know, heading into the season, I thought Clemson was the favorite to win the national championship. I really thought the defense was gonna just lock things down while DJ Uiagalelei really got going and the offense really opened things up, and it didn't happen. And Uiagalelei has struggled. The offense has not gotten going. There's not really been a successful run game to rely on. So it's not like a Georgia situation where you can kind of just get the ball to your backs and really make things happen. It's just struggles all around. So I don't know what's going to happen for Clemson. I think we could very well see Cade Klubnik maybe potentially step in as a starter day one next year. But right now, chaos for the Tigers, because they are definitely not looking at playoffs. And I'm not sure what's going to happen for the rest of the season. I'm not sure we're even going to see them in like a New Year's Day bowl. We could see them finish around 8-4, 9-3, maybe be in like a I'm trying to think of what bowls get the ACC bids, but just a mid-level bowl. And it's going to be quite disappointing, especially for the Tigers.
Maybe the Bahamas Bowl. So what do you think right now? UNC would be the favorites in the ACC?
I don't know. UNC just lost as well to Georgia Tech. They got.
I don't know what to think of the ACC. Do we really want to? Maybe Miami, I guess. I don't know. But let's root for Wake Forest. I'm fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to look at Wake Forest, North Carolina State. I guess Georgia Tech's still very much in the picture. Jeff Sims was injured for these games. But, it's not a good start for the ACC. And right now, I guess Demon Deacon's got the lead for us.
All right, we shall see. Rick wants his Eagles, Boston College, fly Eagles fly. And he wants to know, does Chris Olave go in the first round this year?
I guess the Eagles are undefeated as well. I love Zay Flowers of the Eagles. So, you know, if he can continue it, then maybe. But I'm not a huge Djurkovic fan, so I don't trust Boston College entirely. But for the Chris Olave question, I think absolutely he can. You know, I think that Olave maybe isn't the most flashy of wide receiver prospects, which will kind of keep him from being like a top 10 type of guy. But when these bona fide studs in college football continue to dominate, continue to produce, and then also just add in the fact that he was already kind of considered in that range, I think he's going to get love. I think this is someone that we're kind of looking at as a mid-late first-round type of guy. You know, well-rounded. I think he has a lot of offers, a lot of things to offer in the passing game to where he's going to be a contribution in the pass game, but I don't think he necessarily offers what you would want out of a first-round receiver, or at least what you want out of your wide receiver one. So that's why he kind of falls a little bit, but still the polish, the production, everything added in, I think he's still going to be a safe bet. And for that reason, we're going to see him be in that late first, you know, mid first kind of conversation.
Absolutely. All right. So my pick to win the SEC loses. So A&M's done. And the Razorbacks going strong here, 4-0. Huge win for Arkansas. And we'll kind of group them together. We'll just do some SEC. Georgia smacks Vanderbilt 62-0. No surprise there, really. No surprise. And Alabama went 63-14 over Southern Miss. So is Arkansas legit, Michael? I hope so.
Yeah, I absolutely think they are. And we're going to find out this weekend, Arkansas versus Georgia. Then next weekend, Arkansas versus Ole Miss. Then the weekend after that, Arkansas versus Auburn. So a very tough three-game slate that'll prove whether or not they're legit. And I believe them, absolutely. Treylon Burks is one of the hardest matches in college football. You know, tremendous size, ability to work inside or outside, gets manufactured touches and can take it around the outside because he offers 4.4, 4.5 speed. KJ Jefferson, a tremendous athlete. And, you know, he can throw the ball deep if you give him a window. And he can run the ball extremely well. And then the run game as well. You know, you look at these guys in the backfield. Treylon Smith is a dominant running back. Raheem Sanders really had some impressive runs. I love what Arkansas has to offer. The offensive line's very talented as well. And then on the defensive side of things, you know, they get things done, whether it's people like Bumper Pool, Grant Morgan in the linebacker unit. Jalen Catalone is a very talented safety for this team. You know, there's just pieces all over this Arkansas roster that are going to make it work. And, you know, for that reason, I think we're looking at a team that is going to finish 9-3, 10-2. But if they can win against Georgia, then they're needing talk about playoff team. And they could very easily be, you know, maybe lose to Alabama, but be that second SEC team that gets in because they really are just 11-1 with plenty to prove on their resume.
All right. Real quick, is Kyle Hamilton good enough to escape the NFL bias against taking safeties high?
It's tough to say because, in my opinion, Derwin was, and he still fell. So it's really hard to gauge what the NFL thought process is. But I do think that now, where safeties are being asked to do as much as they are, drop down and be a slot defender, drop down into the box and be a great linebacker, and Kyle Hamilton, in my opinion, can do all of those things, then absolutely. Because, you know, when you have a stud safety that's able to be, you know, your free safety, your strong safety, your slot corner, your linebacker, then he's necessary. And he's absolutely worth the top pick. And, you know, I don't think he's going to be, you know, the top pick. I don't think he's going number one. But I think in that top 10, top five, I wouldn't hate the pick at all. And I think NFL, just the way they've been going with versatility in the defense, I would like Kyle Hamilton yards to that.
All right, and now to the Big Ten. Big Ten's up for grabs, Michael. We got some really good teams. Penn State wins. Iowa wins. They're ranked 4-5. Michigan wins and Michigan State wins. This conference is up for grabs. I wonder if they hurt themselves, if they all beat up each other with a bunch of unlawed teams. Does that hurt their chance to have somebody in the college football playoff? Because again, Notre Dame, they won, still undefeated. Tall task headed up, but they're up to 9 now. They beat Wisconsin in a big win for them. You know, if we have an undefeated SEC team, 2 1-loss SEC teams, and then we have like 4 1-loss Big Ten teams and an undefeated Notre Dame, I think they're gonna go Notre Dame and the SEC as the college football playoff. If there is not an undefeated winner in the Big Ten. But how do you see this Big Ten playing out?
Yeah, I'm actually really curious to see what happens. Michigan looks great. And I'm a little cautious with that just because it is Michigan. But at the same time, you know, Iowa looks great. Maryland is still undefeated, and I think they need to be ranked. And I think that game is a lot closer than a lot of people are kind of giving credit for right now. So keep an eye on that one. It's going to be a Friday night game. So definitely open up your schedule if you can. Indiana comes and plays Penn State, which I think is going to be a very interesting one. Obviously, last year, season opener, Michael Penix Jr., dove and won by an inch, just barely scraping the pylon, and it was one of the highlights of last year. And you know, Indiana could come in with confidence and upset Penn State and a lot of people would be shocked, but you know, that's the chaos of the Big Ten. So right now I'm really excited to see what happens with it. Iowa looks good. Michigan looks good. If I had to pick one team for who I think wins it, I'm probably leaning Michigan, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of curiosity in this Big Ten, and I'm really excited to see how it all plays out.
And last thing on college football, the Oregon Ducks keep on rolling 4-0. I think they're got a great chance to win all their conference games moving forward here. So there's a legit chance for a Pac-12 team to finally be back in the college football playoff, and they're going to keep putting up 40 points a game. It's gonna make the committee notice some things, and it's gonna be good for them.
Yeah, I'm really interested about this next three-game slate. Stanford just always seems to have that upset bug in them. California, late-night Pac-12 chaos just seems to happen all the time. And then UCLA, who's the team me and Nick really like. Those three games, I think, are huge for Oregon. Not that, you know, they get by and they're just automatically going to finish out the season undefeated or anything. But those are three very big games. While they may not appear so on the schedule, I think every one of those games is going to present a tough challenge. And if the Ducks can get by it, then, yeah, I'm going to really start buying in a lot more than I currently am. Right now I'm a little hesitant to give them the same love as everyone else.
Yeah. Got to clock it up for the Ducks right now. Right now they look great. All right, and last thing here, Monday Night Football, NFC East division matchup here. The winner is in first place, Eagles and the Cowboys. Let's root for a tie. But I think the Cowboys are going to win this game. I think they're the better team. Don't love either team here, but I think it's going to be more of the same as last year, where the NFC East is really not that great. But I think I'll give the Cowboys the advantage in this one. I think they have the better quarterback and better head coach.
Yeah, I'm also going with the Cowboys here. I think that the offense is really going to kind of have their explosive game that really sets them up to just go all over this Eagles defense that's kind of having some injury issues. You know, they look.
Michael's a popular guy, keeps getting called there on the show.
Yeah. Sorry about that. People keep calling. Yeah, I think this is a big game for the offense to really get going. Tony Pollard, Ezekiel Elliott in the run game, I think you get going. I'm taking the Cowboys in this one. I do think that the Eagles are going to show off some offense as well, though. I think Devonta Smith is going to have a nice game. Jalen Hurts has a nice game. But ultimately, I think Cowboys win by at least two scores.
And then Thursday night will be an intriguing matchup. The last two number one picks in the draft, Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence going at it. The Jaguars looking to get their first win, and the Bengals looking to keep the good times rolling. And we'll be breaking it down for you next Friday. I want to thank all of our commenters today. Joe Foreman, Rick, Andy, Bailey, and Mars. It was a good show. A lot of comments. We liked that, and want to keep that up as the season progresses.
Yeah, thank you guys so much, and we'll see you guys on Friday. Take care.